Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:47. That's Pacific Summer Time. Today is Friday. It's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes on October 26th. This has been a big week, and there's breaking news as well that Hillary Clinton's email server is being reinvestigated again. So there is the potential between now and the end of next week that we're going to have some volatility in the markets, because this is still, despite the fact that it is that I think the media and the financial markets have pretty much concluded that it is a foregone conclusion that she's going to win the election. We know from the Brexit result that the global electorate has the potential to upset the conviction and the status quo. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if we see some volatility between now and the end of next week. And I really want to kick off, there's a lot happened this week, but I really want to kick off the recording with what's been happening in gold, because you can see from this chart that gold prices have pulled back incredibly sharply, and particularly and this is also a very good example of something that we see reasonably often, that something can rally very impressively away from the 200-day moving average. Then it goes sideways for a while, and then it pulls back very sharply, and it unwinds the last part of the overextension very, very swiftly. And you know, we saw actually exactly the same thing happening in April, May. And it certainly wouldn't be the first time that something like that has happened, because something can, any instrument can revert to the mean in any of two ways. It can go straight up and straight down, or it can go sideways, and then you can often get a mix of the two, which is what we've had in gold. Well, this week and today, we saw gold rallying about $9. It's up $11 this week. It's really the first sign over the last couple of weeks that support is beginning to really start to come back in the region of the trend mean. Now, we always talk about it being the region of the trend mean for the simple reason that some people look at simple moving averages, other people look at exponential moving averages, weighted moving averages, but that's really beside the point. The real point is that when something becomes widely overextended relative to the trend mean, then the likelihood of a reversion back to that mean increases, and now we've had that. So perhaps this is, well, this is at least a near-term low, and follow through next week would certainly confirm that. If we start to see support after any kind of pullback coming in above $1,250, well, then that would start to begin to think, let us think that we've seen a medium-term low. I think it is important, though, to not just view what's been happening in the last couple of days in isolation. That you know, one of the things we talk about incessantly is that we have to avoid myopia. We really should be looking at the longer term. And when we do look at that longer term, then we are presented with a market that trended lower for about 5 years and has now broken that medium-term downtrend. And that downtrend followed a particularly impressive performance for the preceding decade. Now, we can see from this chart that the five-year downtrend unwound about half of the previous advance. That the rally that we've had since the beginning of this year has been really quite different to anything we've seen in the last 5 years, and that if this is going to remain a consistent advance, then it will find support in the current area. And of course, there are plenty of reasons for thinking why gold should be beginning to turn to a position of outperformance once more. Certainly, the pressure has come to bear on a whole number of currencies. But I think that before we go look at some of the currencies, we really should be looking at some of the bond yields. And this really has been a rather big week for bond yields generally. This is a 20-year chart of treasuries and U.S. treasuries, and we can see quite clearly that that was a failed downside break below 1.5% in July. Now we've seen that the progression of lower rally highs that's been in evidence since the beginning of 2014 is being pressured. And what this is beginning to price in is the sensitivity of reasonably long-dated bonds to interest rates. And interest rate risk is something that we haven't had for really what will feel like a very long time, particularly if you're in the region of about 30 years old. You probably don't remember a time when there was any such thing as interest rate risk. So then what we are being presented with is the potential that we are going to see interest rates beginning to rise. And there is a growing conviction that we have been through a period of massive monetary intervention, and that has succeeded in large part in inflating asset prices in stocks, bonds, and properties simultaneously. And that isn't something that we'd seen previously. And it is really a testament to just how much money central banks and the monetary authorities all over the world have been throwing at this problem, because they really have been afraid of deflation. What they failed to achieve, though, is robust economic growth. What we have seen is growth in asset prices and growth in inflation-adjusted living costs. The cost of healthcare, the cost of education has increased really quite substantially, despite the fact that we have seen energy prices decrease really quite considerably over the last year. Well, over the year before this year, I think would be probably more accurate. Then that hasn't really fed through in meaningful terms, because the relative expenditure on energy compared to what one has to spend on healthcare isn't, that we're really not talking about apples to apples here. But oil prices, of course, have almost doubled this year, so that would have removed any deflationary impact from the year-over-year measurements. And as we move onwards into the first quarter of 2017, then the year-over-year increases are going to look really quite profound. So then that is likely to feed through into inflationary pressures overall. What we also have is that we have wage growth. And I really do think that this is something that we really do have to keep an eye on, for the very simple reason that we have US average hourly earnings for all employees forming a first step above a 5-year base. Now, the 5 years from 2010 were marked by fears about deflation and fears that economic activity was not robust enough. And that was part of the reason that the feds were willing to keep interest rates so very low for so very long. But they broke out last year and the Fed raised interest rates. And if it breaks out again, then the Fed will raise interest rates. They have a mountain of debt with which they have not yet told us what exactly they're going to do with it. But what we know for absolute certain is that the cost of servicing debt increases if interest rates rise. Now, if we have the average hourly earnings breaking out and interest rates rise, then that will put pressure on bond yields. What we have had is, I think, simultaneous efforts to have monetary stimulus. And what we are increasingly looking towards is fiscal stimulus. Despite the many failings or unattractive qualities of both candidates in the US presidential election, both of them and both parties are lining up to support a fiscal stimulus or increased deficit spending. With the challenges that are evident in Europe, then there is evidence of support for increasing evidence, at least at the central bank level, and potentially even among the political class overall, that we may have some additional fiscal spending. Now, German bunds were at in negative territory as recently as the beginning of this week, and are now trading at about 16 basis points over that. But perhaps more importantly is that there has been a rivetingly consistent progression of lower rally highs in bund yields since 2008. And negative interest rates are a Rubicon. And I don't think that we can really, I don't think it is an exaggeration to really highlight just how much of a Rubicon they are. That there is something that is just inherently a contradiction that you can make money from getting nothing back. Or in fact, you can make money by paying people. So that really is just a contradiction in terms. And I think when we look back on this in 10 years' time, people are going to wonder how on earth anybody, not least when there was over $10 trillion was in negative yielding territory, that this could ever have been possible. And what we've seen this week is that there has been increasing pressure. It isn't just on treasuries, it isn't just on bunds. If you look at the UK 10-year and 10-year yields, then we get a very similar story. This week we have seen a substantial rally in yields, which would suggest that we're getting some supply dominance. Now, we can ask very simple questions. Has the downtrend yet been broken in terms of the yield? And we could answer very clearly, no, it has not. That there have been occasions in the last 5 years that yields have traded above the 200-day moving average, and yet the medium-term downtrend has been sustained. So, one swallow does not a summer make. This is still a medium-term downtrend overall, and that a reversion to the mean has now occurred. What would really be required to question the integrity of the downtrend is for a sustained move above the trend mean to break the progression of lower rally highs in robust fashion, to make people sit up and pay attention that something really has changed, and then for the yield to find support in the region of the trend mean subsequently. If we were to see that, then that would really start to change the way that this market is operating. But so far, and considering that the complacency that is in this market, then what we have is, we have consistent trends overall, where the total return on US Treasuries has been in positive territory for 35 years. And when you have been surviving in that market by buying the dips, then we have just had a dip. People will be looking at this as a buying opportunity. In order for the bull market to really be questioned, then the buying the dips strategy would have to stop working. And we're not there yet. But certainly, if we have the prospect of higher interest rates, if we have the prospect of bond markets getting a little bit wobbly at the prospect of central banks no longer engaged in massive monetary stimulus, but rather tightening in response to massive fiscal stimulus, then we could have a change overall in terms of what is happening in the bond markets. And that is important because if we look at, for example, the S&P 500, and we compare that in just very simple terms with the bond yield, then what we are then presented with is we had a correlation for much of the decade, and then what happened from, excuse me, from about 2013 was that we had a really quite a significant change. And previous to about, well, it's to 2012, what we had by and large was that every time that stock prices went up, the yield went up. What we're now seeing is that yield went down, and that means that bond prices were going up at the same time as stocks. Now, here's the question. If bond yields now start going back up again, what are stocks going to do? Is the previous relationship between stocks and bond yields going to be reasserted, or is the new correlation between the two going to be sustained? And that really is the big question for stock markets, because if we simply look at the stock market index, then over the last 2 months, it has really done not much of anything at all. And we know that these very inert periods give way to increased bouts of volatility. And we're living in an environment overall where the increasing application of computer trading, algorithmic trading systems, quantitative strategies has resulted in much greater liquidity, where the programs represent a very substantial proportion of global trading overall, but because they are all trading on pretty similar trading strategies, then they tend to move as a herd. And that is perhaps the most important point overall, rather than seeing that there's any particular change in investor psychology, but rather that we're seeing things happening much faster overall. So in June, we get a very swift pullback following a very inert period overall, then a failed downside break, and then we get the market pushing straight on to a new high. We are now at the lower side of a short-term range. It's at the upper side of the underlying trading range between April and May, and it's a natural area that any computer program could pick out and say, well, this is where support would be starting to come in. If this is still a bull market environment, then we will see the market bounce from this area. But these are very, very short-term charts. We really do need to have an idea of what's going on in the bigger picture. And in the bigger picture, the trend mean is around 2100. This has been a very orderly process of mean reversion, which has allowed the price to catch back up with, or at least the other way around, has allowed the moving average to catch back up with the price. If this is still a bull market, we're going to see a bounce from 2100. Overall, if we look at it a little bit longer, then there was a particularly consistent period between 2012 and 2015, and that this range overall, with two very significant periods of volatility punctuating it, represents an inconsistency. And therefore, we could see some additional back and forth around this area before the market can reassert on the upside. And not least in the next week, there is the potential for, one way of describing them would be predatory. Opportunistic might be another way of describing them, but funds that could try to lever the uncertainty about the presidential election into an additional bout of volatility, which could indeed be an attractive buying opportunity. Because we've had these really rather profound periods of volatility overall, then an attractive strategy would be to have bids well underneath the market to pick up on any kind of volatility that might occur. And the pound is perhaps really one of the currencies that has been subject to some of the greatest volatility overall. And it has been trending lower since the end of 2014, and there have been two very abrupt periods of volatility. And there's probably nobody crying in Whitehall about the weakness of the pound at these levels. The UK absolutely needs a weaker currency to deal with the political uncertainty that surrounds the negotiation of the country's exit from the EU. And it's an enormously emotional topic of conversation, and it is perhaps the only revolution in history that has occurred without a manifesto. Usually, some bright spark comes up with a manifesto and then animates the people to revolt. What we've now had is a revolution without the manifesto. So there is a scramble going on to create one, and that represents a period of uncertainty. But the decline of the pound, falling from 170 to 120 against the dollar, really does represent a massive catalyst for a competitive advantage for the UK economy overall. And of course, because the currency is going down so quickly, then the stock market has received a boost in nominal terms, and the FTSE 100 has been ranging for the bones of 17 years. And despite the volatility over the last couple of years, this is a big consolidation, but it's in the region of the upper side of the 17-year range. So a break, a sustained break above 7,000 would reassert demand dominance beyond the short term and begin to suggest that UK denominated companies, which are now be and obviously the FTSE 100 has got a substantial number of global companies and corporate autonomies that will be making a substantial amount of money outside of the UK and then bringing it back into pounds. So we can anticipate that those big companies are going to do very well out of the weakness of the pound overall. And once the political uncertainty has dispelled somewhat, I think that is going to be much more appreciated by the global investor community overall. If the FTSE has benefited from the weakness of its currency, then the Euro Stoxx Index is at a rather interesting period in time, because I'm reminded of 2011 on the S&P 500 when I look at this European index. Because what happened this week was in Frankfurt, the ECB made a statement that they might not remove quantitative easing when it is scheduled to expire in March. And I think I don't think anyone is particularly surprised by that, but we have to think about it in this way. When we had QE1 in the US, the market went up. When it was removed, the market went down a bit. That initiated QE2 when the market went up quite a bit, and when it was removed, it came back down. They still hadn't achieved growth, and they were still worried about deflation. So then they had QE3, and QE3 persisted really for 3 or 4 years, and we had an incredibly consistent advance in Wall Street following that. And I wonder, are we now at the same stage for Europe, where we've had QE1? We're coming to towards the end of QE2, and I wonder, are they going to remove the deadlines and say that they are going to keep stimulus in the system for as long as it is required? They're going to continue to buy bonds. They're going to remove some of the inhibitions that are self-imposed. That is certainly not beyond the bounds of possibility, not least when we have certainly there is the US election in on November 8th, but it is the Italian referendum on December 4th is probably likely to have a much more profound impact on the European markets. But then you have general elections in half a dozen Eurozone countries next year, and most particularly in France and Germany. And I think it is worth highlighting that, Angela Merkel has been in power for over a decade, and that's a substantial term in office for any politician. And generally speaking, electorates tend to get restive after a decade. So it's not beyond the bounds of possibility that she may not be the next German premier. And that could also have an impact both on the euro and the pound. But it is likely to result in the ECB being rather cautious with throwing money around, and most particularly any decision to take it out. But what we are looking increasingly towards is fiscal spending, and that could be really very positive for Europe more than anywhere else, because it has been, I think, constrained, or I think perhaps more important, or more accurately, in a straitjacket of fiscal consolidation for much of the last 7 years. and loosening the purse strings for Europe really could have a very beneficial effect for that stock market overall. When we look at it on a somewhat shorter term, then it has really been ranging for the last year, but it is now at the upper side of that range. Now, if we were to see fiscal spending and some additional appetite, and I've pulled up the wrong chart, sorry about that. Some additional appetite for euro weakness, then that would also lend an additional hand to those European stocks. Now the euro has been pretty much range bound for nearly 2 full years. It is right in the middle of that range, around 110. I don't think that there is anybody in Frankfurt wants to see that euro go above 115, but I think they're probably scared of what it might mean politically and in terms of confidence if the euro were trading below 105. So we've been in this range overall. Now, there is a short-term oversold condition evident, so we may get some additional firmness. But what we can say is that there is a within that range, there's a progression of lower rally highs since May, and that the progression of higher reaction lows that's been there since November of last year has been broken. So any rally might be a shorting opportunity if it gets up towards, say, 112, because the likelihood is that the when we get the U.S. election out of the way, that the focus of attention, not least politically, is going to turn back towards Europe overall. But when we look at some of those individual European indices, then the German index is continuing to exhibit relative strength, that it is consolidating above the trend mean more or less, and that it has broken a medium-term progression of lower rally highs. When we look at, for example, Italy, which has a substantial number of banks still listed, then a process of mean reversion is also underway there. That some of the efforts by Italian banks to get funding in place and to get debt equity swaps in place ahead of the referendum have borne fruit somewhat. And of course, they are also responding to the rather dovish comments by the ECB over the last week. And of course, a drawdown from 24,000 to 15,000 in really just the last 18 months is a substantial drawdown. And it isn't like Italy is all banks. It has a substantial number of companies that have got big global footprints, and they would benefit from increasing demand from and not least if they could get a weaker currency in which to deal with. One thing that I have pointed out has been that the Nikkei has a very similar pattern to Europe overall, but this week it broke on the upside, and it has been led higher by the second section, which generally speaking has been a very reliable lead indicator overall. What we're starting to see in Japan is that the yen, having been so very strong for much of the year, has now broken its progression of lower rally highs and is rapidly coming back towards the region of the trend mean. Now, it needs to be able to hold, or at least the dollar needs to be able to hold this rally, and most particularly if it were to sustain a move above the 200-day moving average, I think that would really be a green light for increased activity overall. Now, when we start to think about all of these things, then gold prices starting to move higher, bond yields firming, but not quite yet have broken their trend means overall. When we look at the prospect for fiscal spending to help support stock prices, then we might be able to conclude that the simultaneous expansion of the bond and equity markets that we've seen might not result in a massive pullback in stocks if we do get a big move up in yields. And not least because fiscal spending should benefit the economy and should benefit stocks and help to improve margins overall. But there is no denying that the stock market has been going up for quite some time already. And something that we were talking about looking for last year as an indication that we were moving into the latter stages of a bull market was the return to outperformance by the commodity sector. And we are seeing that. That, when we look at the CCI index, which is the unweighted continuous commodity index, or the old CRB, then it has broken a really quite profound downtrend. That from 2011, it retraced the entire move up from 2009 and got all the way back to test the 2008 lows. And now it is right in the region of the 200-day moving average and finding support. When we look at, for example, the FTSE 350 mining index on the same basis, then it actually went below the 2009 low, but is now staging an impressive rally, and that is obviously being helped by the weakness of the pound. So, if, for example, then we look at the Australian index, it fell even more, but it is also on a recovery trajectory, has a progression of higher reaction lows all this year, and is trading at new recovery highs over the last couple of weeks. The TSX Materials Index in Canada also trended lower, also found support in the region of its 2008 low, and has bounced from the region of the 200-day moving average over the last couple of weeks. If the return to outperformance after a long period of underperformance by the resources sector is an indication of the fact that we're in the latter stages of a major bull market, then we are getting that signal that we are now at a period of time where we're starting to see some of the economic activity starting to pick up. We're starting to see inflationary pressures starting to pick up, and we're starting to see wage growth. We've even seen in China that the producer prices have also started to move up. So that would suggest that economic growth is beginning to return. And when we look at the A-share index, we have moved into a much less volatile environment overall. And I think that it is no exaggeration to say that the Chinese market is being massaged, that they do not want to see it pulling back very violently. But when we look at, for example, the China Enterprises Index, it's hard not to ignore the fact that it has really gone nowhere at all for 7 years. That we've had a fairly impressive rally off the low earlier this year, and now the index is back testing the region of 10,000, which is a psychological level, and ranging between that and the region of the trend mean. And if it is going to find support, then it should find it within the next about 500 points. And if it can do that, well, then that would really reinforce the potential that that we've seen a low of not least, but of medium-term significance, and that the index could trade back above 10,000 once more. And of course, higher commodity prices should be generally positive for a lot of the commodity exporters in Southeast Asia, and generally speaking, that should also be positive for the Australian index, which has been really prone to quite a bit of volatility over the last year. We can see that since the beginning of this year, it has had some pretty big pullbacks, and that area around 5,500 has now offered resistance in two separate occasions. It has now pulled back to test the progression of higher reaction lows, and if it's going to find support, it should start doing it now. But one of the issues for Australia, of course, is that the resources sector is beginning to pick back up. But the property markets in Sydney and in Melbourne just this week were hitting new all-time highs, and prices have come back in Perth. But that also highlights the the polar opposites of the two big parts of the economy, that the resources sector is benefiting from low interest rates, but it's causing a bubble in pricing of housing. And that is something that is going to play out over the medium term. The financial sector in Australia now represents a substantial part of the overall index, and it has not been able to rally by nearly the same much as the wider market. So we are seeing underperformance by the banking sector overall, and it really does need to sustain a move above 6,000 to break what has been a downtrend over the last 18 months. And there isn't much evidence of it just yet. But I do think that the banking sector really is worth watching, because something that everyone looked back on after 2008 and said, wow, the banks in so many indices had represented such incredibly large weightings, and that should have been a warning to us. But that is particularly true in both Australia and Canada today, and therefore it is really worth watching them at this level rather than any other, because they represent such very large weightings that they must have some. There must be at least some possibility, at least, that they are overextended in one part of the market or another. I thought it was also very illustrative this week that the governor of the Riksbank in Sweden was pretty blasé about the housing bubble that is inflating there, basically saying that it wasn't the central bank's job to worry about it, that they need to set interest rates for the whole economy. I don't think that he really understands that everybody has to live somewhere, and that a housing bubble is going to affect absolutely everyone if it bursts. But that is beside the point, because that's not what he said. He was basically saying that they want a weaker currency. They are certainly trying to get a weaker currency, and I think that when we see what the UK is doing, trying to get a weaker currency, what the Swedish are doing to get a weaker currency, the Swiss have perhaps not been as successful as they might like in getting a weaker currency, but they probably don't want to see it strengthening past parity. The dollar index then is perhaps more a measure of the weakness of its constituent currencies versus the dollar than any particular strength in the dollar, but it is coming back up towards 100. That's a natural area of resistance. So, and I don't think anybody would question that there is a short-term overbought condition on the dollar right now. Now, when we start to look at that, then there is the potential that we get some consolidation in the dollar index, and that really would be a tailwind for the oversold conditions in precious metals to be unwound. And then we would say, well, the dollar would have to really come back below the trend mean to question the potential that this isn't just a bullish consolidation overall. And when we think about the really big themes out there, because obviously this is the long-term audio, India continues to consolidate really a very or in an orderly manner below the 9,000 level, and really a sustained move below the trend mean would be required to really question that that isn't going to continue higher. One of the things that is really helping to drive interest into India is the fact that its government bonds yield 6.8% relative to 1.8% in the US, and quite a bit lower than that everywhere else, and that the rupee has been really quite steady this year, that it has really steadied in the region of that 2013 spike low. And higher interest rates overall will help to support the currency by money flowing into India, and it obviously has improving governance. And improving governance is something that we simply cannot discount, because we have the very real prospect of deteriorating governance in Europe, deteriorating governance in the US, or at least an absence of a willingness to improve governance would probably be a more correct way of putting it. But we're definitely getting improving governance right across Asia and in much of Africa. And that is incredibly important for unleashing the long-term economic potential of the really big growth populations all over the world. So that is a very profound difference that we're seeing. The fact that commodity prices are beginning to recover should also help to increase the demand for emerging markets overall. The strength of the US dollar is a bit of a headwind because there is so much debt has been denominated in US dollars. But this is not a new story, and I think anyone who still has US dollar denominated debt and hasn't done anything about it, despite the fact that the dollar has been rallying now for at least a few years, really needs to get their act together. But what we are definitely seeing is that Latin America has really rebounded. That it was the area that was most susceptible to the weakness of their currencies relative to the dollar because they had so much dollar denominated debt. And you're definitely Brazil has now broken a medium-term progression of lower rally highs. The Chilean market, which is obviously a major copper producer, has also started to be invigorated once more. The Colombian market has also found support in the region of the 200-day moving average. And when you start to look at some of those currencies, then it is the that they were trending lower for just about every year from 2013, 14, 15, and have really firmed up this year. So they're also benefiting from the rise in commodity prices. But when we look at, for example, oil prices, the lower price of energy overall removes a substantial headwind from economic growth. We are at the lower side of a very long-term range, I suspect, but it is going to require massive coordination between the world's major producers to send this price higher. There is a substantial quantity of additional supply becomes economic at these levels, and becomes even more economic if you were to get closer to $60. What we're getting is a period of right-hand extension following a massive reaction against the prevailing downtrend, and there is no indication just yet that it is over, and that prices at the end of this week are trading back below $50. They had bounced from that area in here yesterday, but it is a rangy environment overall, and the easy work of the rally has been done. It is going to be a lot harder to get the next doubling out of this market because it would not only encourage additional supply, but it would encourage additional switching out of oil and gas altogether and into solar. Solar is at that point where it now represents about 1% of all production of electricity, but it has been doubling every year. If it continues to double, then it'll be at 2% and 4% and 8%, and then it's going to have an incredibly meaningful effect on the price of oil overall. And that is also an incredible tailwind for economic growth overall. Then technological innovation is at a point where it is accelerating in an exponential manner. And again, it is rapidly be getting commercial utility. And there are some incredibly exciting things happening in the healthcare sector. And healthcare, more than any other factor, helps to increase productivity growth overall, because if people are healthier, they can work for longer. And if the debt problems that the world has accrued are going to be unwound, then people are going to have to be healthier for longer and are going to have to work for longer. So what happens in healthcare is going to have a very big impact over the medium to long term. But perhaps the most important thing is that technological innovation is global in nature, and that it is increasingly becoming globally accessible faster, so that the US certainly has a technological advantage, but that the access to the technology is increasing very rapidly, not least because it's been driven by software, and software is so easy to go global with in a very short period of time. Of course, everybody has a mobile phone, and most of those phones now are smartphones, and the evolution of the app economy is something that is going to help drive productivity growth, because a lot of those emerging markets are going to be able to skip whole stages of development. They're not going to have to build massive utility networks. They're not going to have to build phone lines, because a lot of the information is going to get they're going to get it straight from their smartphones. Even Baidu just 2 weeks ago announcing that it is unleashing its health app on its doctor app onto the Chinese economy, where the vast majority of people self-medicate, is an incredible step forward because of the amount of data that it is going to create. There are very clear reasons to be incredibly optimistic about the future. But of course, we know that there are challenges represented by the debt markets overall, and I suspect that the next 6 months are going to give us a lot to write about, a lot to think about, and there are obviously going to be buying opportunities. It is a time to really keep an eye on the consistency of trends overall. Certainly, the outperformance of the resources sector is probably going to be one of the places where it's easiest to make money. But we cannot look at the resources sector as a lead indicator for the wider market because it is likely to peak last. And I think with that, I'm going to leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.